Christmas!
Yes, it's that time of the year once again to hang up your stockings, eat copious amounts of mince pies, polish up your baubles, fill yourself with festive cheer, and of course, it's the Wolfie Christmas special. We have a couple of Christmas drinks going around the table as it's Christmas. So guys, I'm coming around and I want to find out what's in your glasses. So the best place obviously to start is with Steve.
Ooh, is it really? Maybe not a great place to start because I finished mine already.
Oh no.
but it was a Baileys and it was jolly nice too.
No, was it original Baileys or was it orange, mint, caramel, salted caramel, cinnamon? I don't even know what other flavours there are on Baileys these days.
I didn't even know there were those flavours. It was original Baileys and I only ever drink it at Christmas. This bottle was left over from last Christmas. It's debatable whether or not I should have drunk it, but I did, and it was delicious.
It's fine. There's about sugar and alcohol in it. It's fine.
That's what I hear. Yeah, yeah.
Very nice. Love a bit of Baileys at Christmas time. It's the perfect tipple. Perfect bedtime tipple, I say.
Yeah, it goes really well in, like, coffee as well this time of year.
It does, doesn't it? Yes.
Shot of espresso in that with some whipped cream on top. There you go.
Ooh, wow. You've just added way more class to that than I have.
or a hot chocolate with a shot of espresso and Baileys.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Very nice.
Well, Chris, what's in your glass, mate, tonight? As it's Christmas,
I've got a pint of the black stuff.
Pint of the black stuff?
Yeah, Bovril.
What? Bovril? Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's pint of Guinness.
Nice.
Running with a spaced theme from last week.
Love it. Love
it was in the fridge, and I was like, oh, that'll do.
Fair enough. Can't say no to a Guinness every now and again.
Oh no, absolutely not.
I used to drink this stuff like water.
Christ. I always used to remember when I used to hate Guinness. Hated the taste of it, didn't like the look of it. I was like, no thank you. I'll just go to my Foster's or Carlsberg, wherever it was. You know, this was before I was educated.
Oh, you're such a lout, Jason.
I do come from Essex, what can I say? Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah. You know? But obviously I've matured over the years and I do appreciate a good pint of Guinness every now and again. And obviously that shows in my tipple that I've got for my Christmas drink, and that's a Northern Monk Chocolate Vanilla and Maple Imperial Stout.
Lovely.
Oh, blimey.
It's lovely. I was like, come on, we're doing the Christmas special recording. Got to have a Christmas special drink. So this is my Christmas special drink, and a very nice tipple it is too.
And I bring the least Christmassy drink that I can ever grip.
Well, it's like it's a stout. It's wintry.
Well, to be fair, I've got a bottle of discarded rum banana in the cupboard, but yeah.
Oh, that's funny, because I've got a bottle of discarded rum pineapple rum in my cupboard. So
yeah, the banana one's beautiful.
It's
fermented few dried unused banana skins and distilled. Oh, it's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Go. Sounds like one of those Caribbean like rum cakes that you could get in a bottle.
I love rum. Oh,
when you say discarded, where do those banana skins come from? They're not found in bins at all, are they?
I haven't delved into it. I'm assuming it's industrial banana skins from like factories and stuff.
Yeah. Or just left around industrial states,
Yeah.
On the curb. Swept up off the floor, you know.
You see some old dude scraping the grit out of it and the fag butts and
on top of the trolley bay at home base,
That's the one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all adds flavour.
It does. Yeah. It does.
Ooh, ashy.
All right, Rich. And I hope I've saved the best till last.
You have, trust me. You have.
Awesome. Well, Rich, what's in your glass?
I've got a beer that I actually imported from the US. Actually ordered it from the US, had it flown all the way over here, so that's how sad I am.
For this recording?
No. I've had this for the best part of 6 months.
Express military helicopter delivery, was it?
Yeah. Got Chinook.
A couple of Chinooks coming over. Drop a parcel, two parachutes.
Yeah, Sweller Braveman brought it over in a Chinook helicopter, so thanks, Sweller.
Not Noel Edmonds in his helicopter gunship. He didn't go over there.
Don't get me started on that, please.
That was such a deep cut.
It was. I actually watched that video the other day, funnily enough. But anyway, I've got, it's from Ra Brewing, which stands for Real Ale Revival. It is Out of Order Otismus Prime. And the can actually has a dog dressed up as Optimus Prime on the art. And it is a banana morning crunch with peanut butter and almonds, smoothie sour, 6.3%. And the details just say lactose sour base conditioned on banana puree, peanut butter, almonds, and a house pastry cream.
That sounds lovely.
And it is gorgeous. It's literally just peanut butter out of a glass. And it looks like eggnog or something you'd find on the internet. It just... Yeah.
Wait, yeah, I'm sorry? It looks like eggnog or something you'd find on the internet?
Yeah. That is such a broad spectrum of...
Well, I think we know what it is. Are you drinking a pint of semen, Rich? Is that what's going on here?
I left a picture in the WhatsApp chat, so...
I did see it, yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit when I spilt a bit and it ran down the sides of the glass on the outside. I was like, oh no. I've seen that before.
On the internet. How much was that can?
This was about £15. So.
Good Lord.
Ooh.
Good Lord.
Is that with shipping or without shipping?
That's without.
It's good, sir. Sure, that's without.
First he's telling us about how warm his house is. Now he's drinking £15 cans of beer.
Someone's imported getting paid it. Too much,
yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah, clearly.
Paid too much to watch YouTube videos, say, at work.
Having a crisis, and I just don't care anymore. Say, I don't know.
There is that.
Does your beer have discarded banana skins in it, Rich?
I've not noticed anything floating in the glass, so... Actually, there are some bits, actually, in the bottom there. You can actually see bits.
Any hairs? Awesome. Any small hairs? Small curly hairs?
All right. Well, now that everyone knows what kind of show they're in for, let's give everyone what they've come here for. But actually, before we do that, I just want to send a few festive thank yous to three lovely listeners before we get into our main feature. And the first is to the wonderful Alex on Twitter for all the support you give to us on Twitter through all the likes and retweeting of our tweets that you do. It's just really appreciated, mate, so thank you very much. The second is to Tubod for all the positive messages that he sends over on our YouTube channel. It really does mean a lot to us. And lastly to Tristan for having a ton of patience while I barrage him with requests for the website and for all the general support he gives to the show. So thank you to all three of you and to all of our listeners for tuning in over the year. We really do love you all. Now, on to our feature, and when workaholic Howard Langston wants to make things up for his son Jamie, he promises to get him the hottest toy of the season, Turbo Man, even though it's Christmas Eve and the toy is practically sold out. As Langston hunts down the elusive gift, he runs into mailman Myron, another father on the same quest. With the clock winding down, Langston's moral code is tested, and he starts to learn the real meaning of Christmas. Directed by Brian Levant and written by Randy Cornfield, Arnie's...
Sorry. That sounds like a fan on the internet.
Randy Cornfield.
That's his name.
Is that his actual role? It's not like
that's his real name. That's the credit on IMDb.
Oh, shit, man.
That's the name a director chooses when I don't want to be associated with a film. Randy Cornfield. From one of Theresa May's favourite memories, is it?
Can't be helped with a name he was blessed with at birth.
Yeah, leave Randy alone. He had to grow up with that name.
Yeah, the bullying he probably got. Anyway, directed by Brian Levant and written by Randy Cornfield, Arnie's only Christmas movie is 1996. Jingle all the way.
Alien predators. Inhuman Terminators. Nuclear terrorists. One man has conquered them all. Now, he faces his most fearsome challenge ever. To buy his son the most wanted toy in the nation. on the day before Christmas. But this time, it'll take more than muscle. It'll take a miracle.
I got the last one, sucker.
This is war.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Jingle All the Way. The comedy that separates the men from the toys.
Continuing with his more family-friendly films that he seems to want to be making in the 90s, this one has kind of universally panned in some ways. It's only got 5.2 on IMDb for its rating. And is it one of his worst? Like, we've all rewatched it recently. Do we think this is one of his worst or one of the worst films of the 90s?
Certainly one of his worst, right? Mm.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's his worst. I mean, End of Days is a couple of years away, but
Eraser,
True Lies. That I actually enjoy True Lies.
True Lies. That was great. I can't think of. I mean, I definitely wouldn't say this is bottom of the pile, and I'm struggling right now to think of ones that probably are worse. I would probably say like Eraser, End of Days, definitely. And there's one more I can't think of, but yeah, this isn't exactly in the upper echelons of. Arnie films.
I mean, I need to get this out here right now. I mean, I'd never seen this film before, you know, before we decided to do this for this recording. So I was quite excited to get into watching this film, you know, because I wanted to see what the fuss was about. Mm. Like, I wanted to see whether this was going to be a film that was rightfully panned, or if it's one of these films that actually was really good and people just didn't really see the point of it or didn't see what they were trying to do with the film. But I can kind of see why it got the rating it did in some ways.
Yeah.
But, and it, like, I mean, I think this was produced by Chris Columbus as well, which surprised me.
That's right. Yeah.
That I thought, oh, produced by Chris Columbus. This, you know, and I'm sitting there right at the beginning thinking, oh, this might actually be better than I'm expecting it to be. And I'm thinking, like, throughout the film, it's all right, actually. It's quite a nice, like, easygoing Christmas film to just chill out with. It's nothing brain taxing. It's kind of predictable. You kind of know what's coming, but there's still a couple of gags in there that kind of hit, and there's a few that didn't. But I'm thinking, like, throughout the film, the one thing I'm thinking is, like, if this didn't have Arnold Schwarzenegger in it and it had somebody else in this lead role, this film might be actually a lot better.
Well, you say that, but there is actually Jingle All the Way 2 that was produced by WWE Studios in partnership with 20th Century Fox. And taking over from Arnie's role was a Larry the Cable Guy, and I can assure you it was not better than this one.
Really?
So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Fair enough.
I had no idea that existed.
Yep.
Me neither.
That says everything about the film, I think.
Yep.
But, like, was this your first experience? I'll go around, like, Rich, was this your first experience of this film?
No, not at all. This is actually one of those things. I actually got this on VHS for one Christmas.
Wow.
I don't remember what year it was, how old I was. It wasn't in the last 5 years, I can assure you. And I don't even know if it was something I actually asked for, if it was just something my parents, as, like, a little last-minute, like, extra thing, were just like, oh, you know, that looks like it'd be fun. Given that to watch on Christmas Day, but I remember getting it and I watched it on Christmas Day, and I enjoyed it at the time. So I don't think I've really watched it since then until now. But yeah, that's my history with Jingle All the Way.
Now, what about yourself, Chris?
Very similar to Rich. I remember the trailers coming out, but I never actually watched it until probably a few years later, probably early 2000s, and it happened to be on some terrestrial or Sky Channel. And I remember we watched it as a family, and I was like, that's not as bad as I originally thought. Like, it was enjoyable, it was fun. Like you said, it's not going to win any awards. It's just fun to just disappear into. You haven't got to worry about anything. Yes, it can be a bit ropey, and it can be a bit forced and not funny in a lot of places. But, yeah, very similar to Rich, very sort of late coming in. I don't think I'd watched it for about 10 years up until yesterday. And even then, I'd only caught fleeting glimpses when it happens to be on when you know, turn the TV on or something. But yeah, that's kind of my history with it as well. didn't really seek it out. Even though it had Schwarzenegger in it, I didn't really go out of my way to see it.
I think that was the same for me, because I'd heard it was a bit crap, and even the pool of Arnie being in it wasn't enough for me to actually spend my time to watch it. And what about yourself, Steve?
So I remember this film coming out. I didn't really want to see it at the time because it looked very... I don't know, the American style of Christmas is very different to the British style, right? And at the time, I just thought it looked super cringe. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah,
and I thought it looked really cringe, so I had no interest in really seeing it. But I've been exposed to this film over the quarter of a century since its release. And, you know, it's also a fairly well-memed film, so I feel like a lot of people have got some familiarity with it one way or another. But I watched it properly for the first time to do this. It's fine. It's not bad. It's all right. Hmm. It's not as bad as I was expecting. I think it's arguably a little bit ahead of its time, which I think might be why it got so panned at the time, because I think it's got a bit of an edge to it that I was not expecting. And it's possible that in 1996 people were not quite into that idea. It's not as pure a Christmas film as I was expecting. It's got a little bit of an edge to it, and I liked that about it.
I like that it does just kind of boil Christmas down to just, it is what it is. It's not some saccharine, like, Xmas film about morals. It's just, hey, capitalism, yay, and the rush to get a big toy. And it's just, it's quite an honest film. It's relatable compared to most Christmas films. So,
I mean, it gets to the third act and they throw all of that away and it just becomes trash. But the first two-thirds of it are, like, it's almost anti-capitalist, this film. Like, it's got class struggle, you guys. Like, the mattress salesman and the postman are fighting each other when they should be fighting the system that is oppressing them. Anyway, it was all right. It was not nearly as bad as I was expecting it to be. Arnold Schwarzenegger, however, horribly, horribly miscast. But that's not why they cast him. They cast him to sell tickets. And, you know, it looks like he had fun. So,
yeah,
that's enough.
I mean, I think it's always quite funny to see Arnie out of his action role persona, if you like, you know, because he goes all family friendly and he does all these like weird reactions to obviously comedic reactions and everything, and it's just not what you would expect to see from Arnie. So it just always feels a little bit out of place when he does these things, like in this film when he's in Jamie's bedroom and he's trying to cheer him up after missing his karate show, and like he does the whole like karate thing, you know, he gets the bell over his head and then he goes and all this stuff kind of stuff, and it just doesn't.
How did that go again, Jace?
It's a one time only, mate. One time only. Sorry.
No, it's for the best, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, you're right. He really does. He does stick out like a sore thumb in this film, and I think he gets away with it because he looks like he's having fun. It's not acting. I don't think he's a very good actor in this film. But he throws himself into it and is enjoying it and having a good time. And it just kind of, that's enough. That sort of carries it.
Yeah. Totally.
But we look at the plot of the film a little bit and, you know, we have Howard, who's this, like, businessman who's really into his work and he keeps missing family stuff because work's more important, apparently. Or he just doesn't realise the time and he's always missing things. And so he misses his son's karate show, and then when he gets home, he has to try and cheer up his son, and so the only way he can think of that is what every parent does and kind of bribe his child into cheering up by getting him something that he wants. And this happens to be the hottest toy in town, which is Turbo Man. And I actually want to just go back to right at the beginning of this film, and we have this whole like few minute scene of like Turbo Man in action in the TV program. And it's such a rip-off of Power Rangers, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was going to be one of my talking points as well. I think it's a deliberate send-up of Power Rangers. Because the toy craze in the 90s, we were all kids in the 90s. You remember all the stories about... They even joke about it in Toy Story 2, don't they? Where they give Barbie their short-sighted retailers didn't order enough to fulfil Christmas demands of the Buzz Lightyear. Echoing what actually happened And I believe that happened with Power Rangers and a lot of action figures in the 90s, even Action Man, where the demand was too high. They physically didn't have enough for the millions of families that wanted these things. I think it's just, yeah, sending up deliberately nostalgia value for the Power Rangers
toy market. I will say, I think there is something actually kind of poignant about this film. I do miss those days of when kids, when there was actually this mass marketed item that was like the hot thing and kids wanted it. I don't want to turn into the old fart now, but now it's kind of like, yeah, there are things that are still heavily in demand that do sell out, that can't, you know, demand can't be met. But now it's, you know, kids are watching, you know, they're playing on their tablets, blah, blah, blah. It's all tech stuff. They don't have the toys anymore in the same way. And I used to love those little, you know, features they used to have on the news when they used to cover, like, you know, what was the big thing. And they'd have, like, you know, some footage from Toys R Us, you know, down the road. And just talking about, you know, the scenes, you know, the mothers gouging each other's eyes out and stuff. It was great.
Like the Kmart carnages. And
God. Yeah, my sister did actually watch a woman. She actually saw a woman punch another woman for a Teletubby once.
Jesus so, Christ.
Yeah, God. Good times.
Oh, the Teletubbies craze, that was mental,
missed
wasn't
those
it?
Days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's right, though, because even my children, they just watch YouTube. So there's nothing to connect them with that kind of marketness.
Yeah, you can't sell out of Mr. Beast, you know, it's just it's everywhere all the time. Yeah.
God, I wish you could though. That'd be good.
I wish you could.
So, like, I mean, what do kids ask for now? What, V-Bucks? Like, what's the... Because, like, kids must still go crazy. Because I noticed in this film as well, Anakin Skywalker is like, everyone I know is getting one. Right? He's like, everyone I know is going to get one. Therefore, so, like, peer pressure. This film has the peer pressure element. I assume that still happens these days.
Yeah.
Just not for, you know, physical... goods.
My kids have,
was it like Fortnite skins? Like, what's going on?
My kids are main Pokemon.
That's what my nephew was. Yeah, my nephew's into Pokemon and is it Roblox? They're constantly asking their dad for Roblox and stuff like that.
Okay,
like,
right.
I mean, my nephew's got a bedroom full of toys, but I've never seen him pick one up in about 2 years, which is a shame. But
yeah, Pokemon and video games. It's pretty much what my kids have asked for. Yeah. And like I was saying to my wife the other day, it's like, you know, like I get excited for getting CD albums and VHS tapes for films I hadn't seen yet, or I had seen once and I was really excited to see again, and all that kind of like physical media that we used to get as Christmas presents is all gone now, because none of my kids want Blu-rays, none of my kids obviously want CDs or anything like that, because it's all streamable. So that's where they get it from now. And you know, I've probably said this before in past shows, but I always feel that's a bit of a shame. I always remember that the excitement on Christmas morning of getting that VHS, you know, the Batman Returns VHS or the Terminator 2 one or whatever it was, Robin Hood Men in Tights, I think I remember getting one year, and just having the excitement of just owning that video, owning that film on a video that I could watch back as many times as I wanted physically, and all the rest of it. It was pure excitement. And I guess it was a bit easier on the parents, because, you know, it is a bit of a struggle now to find gifts that children want or will appreciate, because you could buy them an Apple voucher card, I guess, or a gift card, or an Android one or whatever.
NFT or something, I don't know.
It's not really the same, is it?
Fucking NFT. The same.
Unwrapped my bored ape.
Anyway, man. That's the old man ramble out the way.
I mean, it's definitely not the same. You're right. I mean, I'm sort of ambivalent about the death of physical media. I think I edge on it being a good thing, because there's less things being manufactured, there's less plastic.
There's saves on the plastic and everything.
Yeah, I guess so. But you're right, there is that does seem like a lost time now. Having a bunch of wrapped plastic stuff under a tree.
Yeah. Just can't be it, Steve. Can't be it, mate.
Yeah.
Another thing the internet has killed. God damn you, internet.
I'm waiting for that big EMP pulse. It's going to wipe technology out. Start again.
Might not be a bag in some place,
A cleanse.
That's a GoldenEye reference for you, Chris, isn't it? Yeah.
No, just in general. I think we're overdue. Like, What science has been posting it, like we're overdue an extinction level event, but I'm waiting for the social media digital age extinction event.
It's probably closer than you think.
Yeah. I think people need a cleanse. Like, I've come off most social media for the past nearly 2 years, and I don't miss any of it.
Got Mastodon, Chris. That's where the kids are at.
So. Yeah, man. It's where the cool kids hang out these days.
I suppose.
Dab.
Yeah. Plank.
What? What's going on?
What's going on here?
There was a pee. But yeah, anyway, back to the film.
What's going on Mastodon?
I'm just not going to pull on the thread. I'm too old. I don't know what's going on. And I'm too tipsy from the Baileys. I can't follow what's happening.
Well, back to Jingle All the Way, and so Howard decides that. Actually, his wife confronts him and says, "You did get the doll, didn't you? You did buy it a few weeks ago when I told you to buy it." And I think we can all relate to this scenario, can we not? I mean, I know I've been here many a times when my wife has turned around and said, "You did do this or you did do that," and I'm like, "Yeah, I did that."
Every husband is perpetually like that.
And I think this was one of the most the scenes that I appreciated the most as a mid-40s husband and father kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, I can totally relate to this scene.
It is played up to to a comedy level though, because this guy, like, he forgets everything. He's late to everything. He forgets everything. Like, he forgets to buy his wife a Christmas present in all this palaver. I wouldn't have been surprised if they went, "You also forgot to get your daughter one," and he just goes, "My daughter," and like forgets he had a daughter. Like, it's a little bit absurd the amount of things that he's late for and forgets. But also in with this storyline, which we've seen before countless times, where the dad works really hard and so is not there for his family as much as everyone would like him to be. I always feel really sorry for the dad, because look at the size of that house. The house is fucking massive, right? Mm-hmm. And houses don't pay for themselves, right? It's a film from the 90s, so presumably the mother does not work. I'm making an assumption there. Is there any indication that she works?
No. So, which begs the question, why the fuck didn't she buy the Turbo Man 2 weeks ago?
Well, quite. So this means that John Matrix is busting ass. he's busting at, like, shit doesn't pay for itself, man. Like, they need to kind of some slack. Like, no, I didn't buy the doll. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. I'm toiling under capitalism. Leave me alone.
I was busy earning the buck. What were you doing?
He is comically over the top how forgetful Jack Slater is in this film. I'm going to keep this ball rolling now, sorry. But also I appreciate how, and they could easily have done this, especially a film of that era, they could have made the wife a nag and a bitch and made her, like, unlikable. In spite of his character traits, they would have somehow turned it onto her. So I'm glad they did. I'm glad they didn't go down that route.
Yeah,
she was actually good class,
the film's
right?
Credit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, okay, cool, nice to see. But yeah, I admit, I didn't quite go on the journey with Ivan Danko. everyone else did. I didn't feel sorry for him. I thought he was a bit of an arsehole, to be honest. And I didn't feel he even learned anything in the end. It felt like he was just doing it to, like, the whole arc of the story. It's not even like he generally realizes where he's gone wrong. I felt like he just bought stuff, wanted to please his son just so he could make his own conscience better.
Well, I mean, let's not forget, his motivation is, I don't want my son to end up like this postman.
I know, yeah. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
And I went, my journey in terms of watching this film, and it was maybe, I kind of regretted it in the end, but I actually thought the hero of the piece was Phil Hartman.
Wow.
The would-be predator of the film.
Very rapey.
Yeah, very rapey.
We'll get into his character in a minute.
But I thought, you talked about the big house, and I'm like, the house that wasn't decorated, that he hadn't done. Hey, Phil Hartman did it for him.
Yeah.
He's got his shoulder to the wheel, Rich. Major Alan Schaefer is spending every hour he has at the mattress place.
I just don't think that's a good enough excuse, and I think Hercules needs to,
yeah.
buck his eyes ears up.
Well, just... I think we should cut Conan some slack, personally.
I think we should. It's time for us to have a little chat about the cast of the film, and I think we've said pretty much what we need to say about Arnie, really, haven't we, in this film, and what he kind of brought and what he didn't bring to the film. And so, like, my first surprise of the film was Jake Lloyd. Like, oh, yeah. It's the kid from the Phantom Menace, right. Star Wars film.
Yippee! Yeah.
So I totally forgot he was even in this when I started watching it yesterday. I was just like, well, wait, what?
He's good.
Okay.
He is good. Okay. He proves in this film that he is a better actor than... I'm completely blanking on the creator of Star Wars. George Lucas. Yeah. A much better actor than George Lucas was capable of getting from him, like, mm-hmm. clearly.
Yeah, agreed. 100%. Yeah, he doesn't... I mean, I can't... Usually, I don't really have much time for child actors in films. I just instantly dislike them. But he was perfectly quite sweet in this. And he wasn't grating... You felt for him. You did. He actually did a good job at selling, like, just the hurt. Like, the bit when he's in the bedroom after when Harry Tusker comes home and basically is trying to, like, win him back round, and he kind of does that eye roll when he does all the kung fu shit, and he kind of, and then gets off the bed to go do some drawing. It's like, damn, it's like really good facials in it. Like, it was almost quite adult performance. Mm. I was like, that's good for a kid to emote that way, so...
And also, what makes Phantom Menace awful is the dialogue that is given to the child to deliver.
Of course.
I feel so sorry for Jake Lloyd, because, like you said, what I saw yesterday was actually a decent young child actor.
Yeah. Not
whose career was unceremoniously snuffed out in 1999.
Yeah.
But that's an angel? That's toxic fandom for you, that is. Well. That's not to do with him or anything else. It's
just... I'm sure he's doing fine now, though. I won't go check. I'm just going to assume he is.
Mm. But yeah, no, I was lucky. I can't say anything more than what you guys have said about him. He was perfectly cast, and he did a great job. Really, probably one of the better actors of the film, overshadowing Arnie. Absolutely.
Well, you know, all the actors in this overshadow Julius Benedict. I mean, like, it's just.
It's getting tired now, Chris.
No, it's not.
All right, and then there was Sinbad, who played Myron. And I thought, with my non-knowledge of wrestling, I thought he might have been a wrestler. But he wasn't, was he?
No. Sinbad is a comedian.
He's a comedian,
isn't he? Maybe a stand-up and stuff? Yeah.
Yes. He was bigger in the 90s than he is now, which is why he's in this film.
Because I never heard of him before. And when I saw him, he just completely passed me by. But he played his role in a fun way.
Yeah, no, I think so. He was fine. I mean, some of his lines in it were really good. Like, he had some really good... And it goes back to what Steve said. The film has got a bit of edge to it. When, what's the bit now? I think it's to do with the, they're giving out the plastic balls.
Oh, yeah.
The draw. I think he loses... I forget how it goes now. Oh, shit. Yeah, that's it. So I think Howard swipes the ball from Myron or something like that, and he starts shouting, oh, he's got two, that's my ball, and he starts shouting, Rodney King. I generally got a belly laugh out of that. I was like, oh, you got me good there. I was like, it really, yeah, he's got some good lines, and the whole like bit where he actually inadvertently blows up some government workers with a parcel bomb. That I honestly wish they didn't cut back to the scene where you see them all charred. I just thought, just leave it hanging like that.
Yeah.
It would have been so much better. Like, oh, they hit different. So, yeah, he had some funny lines in this film, I will say.
I did like the whole thing where, you know, he's pretending he's got a bomb in one of his packages, and then it turns out to be nothing. And then they do exactly the same gag later on in the film. But this time it actually does have a bomb in it. And so then the policeman gets blown up. I thought it was quite a nice 90s gag, because they can't pull off that kind of gag anymore.
Yeah. And a policeman who has been a recurring character throughout as well, which also feels like a very 90s thing to do.
What's that? The cop that keeps turning up at the wrong moments?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also it played into the plight of postal workers during that time as well, you know, with the whole discontent. And didn't touch upon, like, you know, mass shootings, thankfully. That's good. But, yeah.
They made a going postal joke in this film, right? Like, well, like, that's what that is.
Yeah. He does. Yeah, very true, yeah. So, but, yeah, it's also, you know, quite... I think it's a film that actually strikes a chord with a... the current age we're in, you know, support your postal workers.
Yeah, because they'll run down the street and throw your mail on the raining, on the puddly floors, and you won't get your Christmas mail. No, maybe that's just me. I was like, really,
but
like,
that's a good thing, what? Chris, because then you'll realise that you don't need your Christmas mail.
You don't need
mail.
Christmas
and what
mail.
You actually
no.
need. No, no, it's fine. Rise up. No.
My brain instantly went to, he's throwing people's Christmas post away on Christmas Eve. What the hell? Packages, parcels, it's like a TARDIS bag. Like, he's pulling boxes out of there that wouldn't...
okay, and let's get on to the man himself, Mr. Troy McClure, Phil Hartman, and star of the film?
Oh, for me, yeah.
Always.
Sure,
always.
Yes. Yeah, he's great.
I miss Phil Hartman. I just... Such a travesty.
At the beginning of the film, he came across quite a perfect man.
He actually played the Ned Flanders role. He was the neighbour next door who was really nice and kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Much of the chagrin of, you know, our protagonist.
Sure, I guess so.
And
he kind of, as the film goes along, he seems to, like, you see his true colours in a way, and, like, you see him turning more into a creep as the film goes along a little bit and trying to move in on Howard's wife.
He has those little moments, right, where it's very clearly a mask that he wears and is very good at wearing it, because he occasionally cracks, like when he tells the kids to shut up when he burns his finger. It's all just an act, and it's played extremely well. I think he's definitely the star of this film, because that character is fantastic.
Ted is very multi-layered. There's definitely a lot going on under that skin, and it definitely made for the more interesting parts of the film. You know, like, I love the scene where he's in Howard's house and he's told his wife to go and lay down and have a rest and he'd take over the baking of the cookies. We get that phone call between him and Howard, you know, and he's going, oh my God, these cookies are so great. And
put the cookie down now, Howard. Yeah, I did it. I was weighing. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's the bit when he says to Howard about, like, I think she's in the shower, want me to go check? And he's like, oh, yeah. I'm laughing my ass off for that. It was good.
Can I just point something out at this point? I've just been reminded of this because I'm remembering the reindeer gets introduced pretty early on. But the moment when the T-800 goes to bed and then he sort of suddenly goes wide-eyed because he remembers he didn't buy the thing... It feels like that's a pivot point for this film, because everything before that is very grounded and believable, and everything after that moment is fucking bonkers. Like, physics stops mattering, Phil Hartman has a reindeer for some reason, like, everything just goes bonkers, and it feels like there's like a line in the sand, and when you cross it, this film is weird as hell after that point.
Yeah, I feel like it's something that's so common in a lot of films where it flows quite nicely, then they just kind of throw the rules out and it just descends into ridiculousness.
Why does Phil Hartman have a reindeer? I can't remember why. I don't think they justify it particularly well.
He needs something to punch, doesn't he? So he can't punch a person.
Right hook a reindeer and then share a beer with him afterwards. You know,
I think, wasn't it to, like, impress the ladies that he had a reindeer for their children to...
Possibly.
Something.
I didn't even think of it that way.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, true. Women love reindeers, I'm sure. So, I don't know.
Well, my kids, when they were young, they always used to get excited when they saw a reindeer because they thought Santa was close by or something. So, maybe that's, you know, another
remember
layer
you
of
seeing
Ted. You know,
wild
thinking...
reindeers in Essex, Jason.
You'll be surprised, mate.
Yeah, true.
What goes on down here in Essex?
I'm keen to know what else he did, though, like, really got all the neighbourhood's women completely into him. Like, I imagine it was just the same game plan as what he was doing with Howard's wife. He was just very nice, very helpful, considerate of their feelings. And
fixing were, like, things and...
Yeah, when the bit with the karate competition thing and, like, he's got his video camera out, which, again, dates this film because that ain't happening anymore. And they were just like bringing cookies there and like, oh, can you come fix my screen
That's
door?
Right.
I was like, you know, I think I've got a tool for that.
Yeah, he says, so I've got a perfect tool for the job. And then he pulls such a weird face. Which just, he just mugs the camera. He may as well have just said, I mean fucking, I'm talking about fucking.
My big pulsing cock.
You just reminded me as well, is that the way he talks in this film as well is quite, it's so sleazy.
I love his voice so much.
That it just played in with this kind of sleazy persona that he turned into near to the end of the film. And of course, the last person I want to talk to in the cast is James Belushi, who played the greatest like gangster Santa I've ever seen in a film.
even better than Bad Santa.
I hate Bad Santa. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't like Bad Santa. It was a bit poo. Sorry.
I really liked this part of the film. This is descending deeper into this film being bonkers.
Yeah.
I really loved that the secret knock on the door was jingle bells. I love that he just went into a weird backroom sweatshop of cigar smoking elves. Good stuff.
And Santa's
stuff.
Making counterfeit goods. Yeah.
That's right.
I can't remember how you say it. It's Turbo Time in Spanish, but it was pretty good. I would love one of those. I think this is pretty quality. You know, not even educational purposes, but it just sounds more classy. I like it. So, and also in that scene, I know Jason said earlier when he wasn't sure if Sinbad was a wrestler, but there was actually a wrestler in that scene, and that was Paul White, a.k.a. The Big Show, who was the big, like, fighting Santa.
Okay. I did wonder that, because that guy was massive.
Yeah, that was Big Show. Straight away, as soon as I heard his voice, I was like, that's Big Show. I think when I first saw this film, I probably, at the time, I was a few years shy of seeing him for the first time. So this would have been very early into his, WCW run, I guess.
Would he have been cast because of who he was, or was it just because
probably
of his size?
It's probably just the physique.
It's funny that I didn't recognise him because Big Show was in an episode of Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh, was he?
It was the early 2000s and wrestlers were turning up everywhere.
Very true. I just love how you put your Star Trek reference in.
Well, my brain was wired in extremely different, weird ways.
But, I mean, this scene did hold one of my favourite parts of the film, and I'm sorry to... Little People? Is that the safe way?
Yeah.
When Arnie turns around and hits the little person, and he literally goes flying through the air for what seems like an eternity before he hits up against the wall.
And that was Danny Troyer,
wasn't it? It was Danny Woodburn was the main. Vern Troyer was like
Vern Troyer was as well. Yeah,
it's Vern Troyer uncredited in this film, which is weird to think about.
Because Austin Powers was only a couple of years before, wasn't it? Or a year before?
Why did it take Austin Powers to credit a little person in your film? It's kind of fucked up that he's uncredited. We need a little person for a slapstick moment, but they don't matter enough to get a credit. Oi, oi, oi.
Well, let's get on to our favourite moment of the film, and I'll go around each of you and we'll find out what those are. And as I started with Steve last time, I'll start with you again, mate. Was there any particular point of this film that really stuck out to you?
I think it is the backroom Santas. Yeah. He gets into a car with clearly extremely sleazy Santa and a very sleazy elf. And yeah, they promise him a turbo guy, and they end up going to this workshop where they make counterfeit stuff, and it's really super weird. And I think there's been weird moments before this, but this is the point where the film is telling you, yo, shit's gonna go off the rails, so strap in. And it does go off the rails, and I enjoyed it. It's a good time.
Rich?
For me, it really comes down to one line in the film, and it's one of the real moments of actual, like, quite black comedy in this film. And that's when Howard's been ushered in backstage when they're preparing for the carnival, and he is being fitted for the suit. they think he's the replacement for this guy called Pete, who was injured during rehearsals. Yeah. And the assistant says to him, the doctor says, Pete actually showed some brain activity this morning. Yeah, that's a really good sign. And gives him the thumbs up. And I was grim. And I was like,
oh my God.
I was right up my street. I got like a real belly laugh from that, but that's just my sick sense of humour. And it came from this 1996 kids film. So yeah, I respect that. I will also say one thing is one of the things I didn't like so much. I don't know if you remember, there's a bit towards the end when the kids are beating the shit out of, what's his sidekick's name again? God damn it. It's gone now. Booster, that's it.
Oh, yes. Oh,
that's right, yeah.
And the kids are beating him up because it confirms that actually no one does like Booster.
Yeah.
And one of the kids calls Booster a hard homophobic slur.
Really?
I don't think it's in the Disney Plus version, but yes,
no,
it does.
No, I didn't hear that. Hear that in the Disney version I watched,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's you stink, I hate you on the show, and then the other kid says F.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Yeah. I was like, damn. I remember that from the VHS, and it was just like, yeah, this is another time. Like, damn. So, in some ways, I put that up my favourite moments as well, not in the way you think, but just because it is a real nice window into how much we've thankfully changed. But, Jesus.
Well, you'd think.
Well, you'd think, yeah, so... That kid's just got a blue tick on Twitter now, so. Fuck that kid.
Chris, what was your favourite moments, mate, in the film?
Well, I was going to talk about the suiting up moment. Rich covered that quite beautifully and eloquently there. But for me, for some reason, I don't know why, the biggest laugh in the movie to me was the reindeer fight in the house, which I don't remember the... I don't remember the right hook to the reindeer's face and the reindeer's reaction as it slow-mos backwards and lands on the carpet. I found that shit hilariously funny. I don't know why. But the funniest part of that entire scene was when the house catches on fire because I think, is it Jesus's head or a wise man's head landed in the fire?
Yeah.
And he's trying to put the fire out. And then he boots it out the window.
Yeah.
And there's carol singers out there singing and this burning head of... a wise man or Jesus lands in front of them burning and melting away and they just all scream and like Richard just, you know, that speaks to my very morbid sense of humour to see religious people singing carols and then a burning head of the saviour just kind of I don't know why it just made me giggle. Don't know why.
No, I'm with you, Chris. That was one of my notes from one of my favourite parts of the film as well, was when the fire in head got kicked out of the window like that.
Just scream and run away.
Yeah. And you've covered my other ones. James Belushi scene in the Christmas gangster backroom smokehouse, whatever it is going on back there. I just thought his whole performance was just really good.
Yeah.
Just from the start where we see him in the mall. And he's like, you know, whispering Howard, yeah, psst, psst, you know, you're after one of these turbo guys, you know, and taking in there and just everything that went happen there and everything. And he's doing his little chicken dance and everything was lovely. And I already mentioned the little person get punched and sent flying for some reason. It just hit my sense of humour, unfortunately.
There's a pattern emerging here.
Are you slapping your thigh when it happens?
Not into
it's like Weezer.
I'm not noticing it, but maybe.
one thing I did notice in yesterday's Disney Plus version was the older I get, the more I notice the small moments in a film that is like a pure character building moment is when they're beating him up, and one of the minions or whatever they're called, Assassin Squad or whatever, that look like Power Rangers, he says, "Don't you know the choreography?" and then just kicks him. I was like, "Wow, that got deep." That was like, why would they throw that line in there? Because obviously that's the joke. He isn't the person they've employed, so he doesn't know the choreography. And I was like, that's quite deep for a trashy 90s comedy about Christmas with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I just found it quite profound.
Speaking of the mall, there is actually the one other scene I did like, the bit where Arnie, when Howard gets mistaken for a paedophile.
Oh, right, bit. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I love a mistaken paedophile identity gag. It was funny.
So, like, being accused of being a paedophile for comedic effect, that felt lighter in the 90s than it does now. I think the reason why we wouldn't do that now is because it feels a lot darker to do that these days.
The kids, so that did kind of take me by
surprise.
Well.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it made it more playful, no one
calls the police. They're just like, no, it's fine. We hit him with handbags. He's gone. Yep. It's fine. Yeah. We're safe now. Like, no one feels passionately enough to do something about the fact that there's a pedo here. Weird.
You're just scared him 90s. Off to run off somewhere else now. He's now something else's problem. Do you feel that scene was homage to the mall scene in Commando? Because, you know,
I mean, of course, I got it goes similar vibes. Saying, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Just just hanging around like next to the lift.
Yeah, I like to think
you have the steel drums, and it's basically shot for shot.
Yeah. I'm sure one of the mothers was wearing a chainmail as well. So.
What they should do is play the audio of the radio conversation that's going on with security and Commando. You see the man, he's jacked. I can't remember the exact words over the radio.
Oh, shit, man. Oh, God.
Score for the film was done by David Newman, and nothing spectacular really, was it, from hit for the score for the film?
I don't remember anything of it.
It was just noise. It was just there.
It was good. It felt 90s.
Mm. Yeah,
which I know is a lazy description, but it felt did. 90s cookie cutter 90s family comedy score.
There was nothing. I mean, I can't even think of any of the score that even remotely kind of sounded Christmassy either.
No.
It was just this kind of like generic 90s family comedy style score.
Yeah. I think they covered the Christmassy bits by just playing Christmas songs. That was the only time where it felt Christmassy to listen to. But no, you're right. It was the actual score, not at all.
Yeah, I'd like to talk more about the score, but I just don't think there's nothing else to say about it really, is there? And like, maybe it's another downfall of the film in some ways. You know, obviously, if they managed to get John Williams in or something, you know, when you look back at Home Alone score and you've got the distinctive music that comes with that film and that elevates that film so much more in your memory and your nostalgia for that film just from the score.
See, you've touched upon something I was going to bring up, because when I was watching it, I recognised a name earlier yesterday. And David Newman actually composed the music to the Firefly follow-up movie, Serenity.
Oh, did he?
All right.
Yes.
Okay.
And I remember sitting there, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. And I looked him up. Now, on that entire soundtrack to Serenity, there's only maybe two or three memorable tracks that I listen to on Spotify. Because, again, the show, if you listen to Greg Edmondson's score for Firefly, the show, it's a beautiful fusion of modern Western music and Asian music, and it's beautiful. But when the film came around, for some reason, Joss Whedon managed to get the most vanilla composer to do the music for his follow-up film, which was annoying, because the show itself musically created this beautiful, rich universe with just the music, and it's gorgeous. And then David Newman comes on for the film in 2005, and I remember being a bit like, oh, is this it? It sounded so unlike the show that it took me out of the film experience in a way, somewhere.
Yeah, I do remember seeing that film and thinking, I love that film, but it did feel like they took a turn on the music, and it just feels different.
Yeah, seriously, hit up YouTube and listen to Greg Edmondson, Firefly, and then David Newman, Serenity, and they are two completely different things. And again, like, it's just so vanilla and a missed opportunity.
I guess David Newman's just a composer for hire. You pay him, he gives you a score, and then that's it. There's nothing,
I just remember coming away from this film and Serenity being the only two that I've ever known him to compose, going, oh, okay.
That's all you can say.
I guess it does explain those few little musical cue callbacks that he did to Jingle All the Way, though, in the Serenity score. So
that's true.
Given that, I noticed them. They were there, so it made me smile and I clapped.
Yeah. Yay!
Do you remember Howard? I do.
He also scored Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Really?
Okay.
I did not know that. That's surprising, really, because there's more memorable stuff that came out of that film, score-wise, than the other two films that we mentioned that he scored. So maybe he's just got lazy. Maybe he just became a lazy composer.
We need to find out what else he's done now.
I've actually got his Wikipedia open right now. I saw
but he's done Norbit. A bunch of, like, Vinnie Jones direct-to-video movies, probably. Fight Factory stuff, probably. Would surprise me. £8 to Tesco's.
He's done quite a bit.
Okay. He also scored seminal masterpiece The Flintstones.
Did he?
Yeah. So maybe he was just having an off day on this one, I don't know.
Maybe.
There's a film I want to watch again.
The Flintstones? No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
I think it's all right.
Don't do that.
I
think it's one of the best cartoon to live-action adaptations ever done.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's just, oh, really?
Halle Berry for the dads.
Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe... maybe because now, I was... So. Yeah, maybe... How old was I? What, 9? So I was a 9-year-old. Yeah, I just got this attachment. I don't know. The Flintstones, just for some reason, all the jokes land brilliantly, and I don't know. Weird segue. Scenes from the opening fifth film were also filmed at Vasquez Rocks, which is also where the Flintstones was filmed.
I'll be
where Bedrock was built. And also... Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where they get thrown off of the Vasquez Rocks after watching Star Trek, which was also filmed at the Vasquez Rocks.
Oh my god.
That was a 6 degrees of separation if I've ever heard one.
That's nuts.
That is nuts.
That's so cool.
Let's move on to the ending of the film, shall we? And let's have a discussion on how they ended the film and Arnie turning into Turbo Man and what we saw throughout the ending. And do you think they did the right thing in the way that this film ended?
No.
Oh wait, it didn't end after losing my shit at all the characters that I noticed in the parade.
I wanted to bring that up because I was like, oh my god, look at that one, look at that.
I was just like, oh my god, it's the whole Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the TV moment. It's like,
How should they have ended this film?
With better green screen.
Howard's thumb should have slowly lowered down into the molten metal as John Connor watched on.
And put a thumb up and then done.
Yeah. I did actually see a bit of trivia on this. Apparently, when this film was broadcast once, I think it was on TBS in the US, someone wasn't doing their job properly. But basically, there's a scene when he's flying in the suit and he says, oh, I think I'm getting the hang of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it just cut to the end credits.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how they did it, but they did. Yeah.
Wow.
I would have preferred it when he was like free-falling, when he was like, you know, falling to his death and then just credits, just leave you hanging. But yeah, that happened. That happened. So. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was quite a cool idea that Arnie became Turbo Man in the parade. I thought that was quite a cool idea. I could see where they were coming from.
Yeah, that was the overall Christmas message, wasn't it? Like, my dad's the only Turbo Man I need, you know.
Yeah.
Now when I say that out loud, that sounds bad.
And the wife was into it as well. Oh,
yes,
Howard.
She was, like, yeah.
Yeah,
also, my autistic brain watching this was just like, who would rig a real working jetpack at a Christmas Eve parade on a costume? And my brain was just like, no, just no. It worked for the joke, but
he's got
why
this,
would
like,
that even happen?
He's got his lethal boomerang, whatever it is he's got, that, you know, can do proper damage. And, you know, what's that doing on a parade costume?
People in you know, flying suits just crashing down, you know, with a big crowd below. I just thought the sheer amount of, like, public endangerment, you know, it's like one of those home videos you get from those, like, air show disasters. It's just
God,
this is going to be bad. Yeah. It's
like, you should have been, like, shot down by 3 F-16s. I guess I don't want to spend, like, too much pontificating on this because, after all, we are talking about Jingle All the Way. But I don't like the ending because he's supposed to learn, right? The message is supposed to be, right? It's not about the toy. It's about being together at Christmas, right? But they fucking put him in the suit and he becomes the toy. He becomes Turbo Man. I just think, nah, you got mixed messages here, man. That doesn't make sense at all. In order for your son to love you, you have to not buy him the thing, you have to become the thing. And it's only then that you're deserving of your son's love. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. But again, it's possible I'm overthinking the film Jingle All the Way.
Yeah. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. But I mean, it gave them the excuse to turn this into a kind of like comic movie, and Arnie's flying around and kind of flying into a building and then kind of doing the whole like twing.
Yeah, you know, like. I do like that.
No,
it just wasn't realistic. So.
Not at all, no.
Yeah, up until that point, the film's kind of semi-acceptable as this could happen.
It's the integrity of the film.
Do you know,
then the jetpack gets turned on.
Do you know what I mentioned earlier,
right,
when he's in bed and then he goes wide-eyed and then the film stops making sense? Do you think there's like a gas leak in the house?
Yeah. It's all a carbon monoxide
and
fever dream.
This is just a carbon monoxide dream, yeah.
Saying like before his wife at the end says, "You did get me a present, didn't you?" And she just collapses before she says it, and then he does the shocked face of the camera. Credits.
Credits over a freeze frame comedy face.
Oh shit, man!
But then, of course, Myron returns and he attacks the actor who's playing the bad guy. I can't remember the name. Sorry, and gets into the costume so he can come down, steal this Turbo Man action figure that's being given away as a prize, and of course, you know, which has been given to Jake. And Jamie.
It was just like the show.
It's just like the show, yeah. Everyone thinks it's part of the show when in fact this like sour mailman has just come down to rob this toy from a child. And,
well, when you break it down like that, yeah.
I mean, you've got a crowd of people, disgruntled poster worker. It could have been a lot worse, that's what I'm saying.
And all kind of predictable, really, wasn't it? And
yeah.
There was no real big surprises. They tried to, like, hide that it was Myron, you know, like, oh, who's this guy who's, like, just beat up this actor and got into the costume, you know? Who could it be? I wonder. And obviously it turned out to be who you thought it was going to be.
Bennett. Hello, Howard.
What I would have liked to have seen is for Ted to do that. Now, that would have been great.
Oh, yeah.
More Ted, of course.
Absolutely. But, of course, Ted was busy. He was, like, trying to move in on Howard's wife in the car while the two kids had run off to... What's the beef with that scene, Rich?
It was a bit rapey. And
yeah.
He got a face full of eggnog, though, so...
Well, yeah.
Make your own jokes. shit.
But, of course, you know, Arnie beats Myron away, and, like, Jamie gets his toy, which he then gives back to Myron as he's being arrested. I thought was quite sweet and nice, actually. They didn't have to do that to end the film successfully, but I thought that was a really nice, like, kind Christmassy touch, you know?
Yeah. I had an issue with that scene, though, because notice how the police were arresting Myron and left Howard alone.
Yeah.
Curious.
Yes. I noticed that myself, actually.
Just, drawing some dots there, thinking, why could that be?
What is it about those two characters that are not the same?
Did you think it was a bit weird, like the whole crowd just like all of a sudden was like, yeah, Turbo Man, yeah, and like lifting him up on their shoulders and carrying the wave on a surfing dish. I can't remember, what do they do in gigs? I can't
crowd surfing.
Kind of thing, wasn't it? And I thought, like, was that necessary?
Meanwhile, there's someone unconscious on top of a roof somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like probably bleeding out. So that's good. So,
and the amount of people that are probably extremely injured by falling debris and other shenanigans that were happening. Maybe some second and first degree burns from the jetpack that was on his back. I don't know. Child endangerment.
Yeah, because you know, if that would happen now, like after all the excitement had calmed down, like Howard would be like, right, who do I sue?
Mm. Yes.
For
there would be an inquiry set up. Yeah. Really large class action suit.
Oh, shit. One thing with that whole carnival scene, though, one thing I found myself doing, because I'm a fucking sad bastard, but when you see all the people in the costumes, all the different, you know, characters and IP walking along the road, I was just seeing how many of those now belong to Disney.
Yeah, okay. That was quite ironic. That
I saw Sonic. Sonic was rather fun. Yeah, I saw over the moon for that. Yeah. I was like, yeah, gotta go fast. And there was there's a few others I can't remember now. The only thing that really did jump out to me was with the son's bedroom early on in the film. It was just covered in Marvel stuff. So I was like, damn.
Yeah, they had really nice foreshadowing.
He had a really nice Captain America painted wall, didn't he?
He did. So
I appreciated that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, everything ended up being happy. Everyone was happy in the end, and Howard redeemed himself and learned the lesson that, you know, he shouldn't put work first. He should put his family first.
But the house is so big. How are they? He can't keep up with the mortgage payments unless he works that hard, right?
No.
Well, maybe that is a lesson they're going to learn in the future, or they've learned that now, and that's why they didn't return in Jingle All the Way 2.
I want the real like Jingle All the Way 2 with him. You know, if he reprised his role like a few years after the original, but they kind of went down a like Heavy Rain kind of angle with it, that would be really good. That'd be so good. Like the wife leaves him, he's in a flat on his own because he got their kid killed. It'd be really interesting study into the character of Howard, and I think it would have been quite good. So,
wow.
Yeah. So
they could have just called it Jingle.
Yeah.
That would have been called what would they call it now? I'm just trying to think. Just been called Langston, or would that be the name of the television adaptation they would have done about it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Langston the series. Yeah.
Well, instead, it wasn't that the game where the characters running around going, Jason,
yeah.
Jason,
in a shopping mall, funnily enough, as well.
Maybe Jamie, you'd be shouting,
Jamie, yeah, Jamie, and then he gets hit by a car.
Oh.
Spoilers. Sake.
Well, I think we've reached the end. Is there anything else that you guys want to say about Jingle All the Way before we go and drink some eggnog?
R.I.P. John Hartman.
Yeah.
Because he's great.
You merged the two together. One guy that is dead and one guy that's not dead.
Wait, what did I say?
You said John Hartman.
Phil Hartman.
Just wish Phil Hartman was still around. It's just such a sad story.
I hate the fact he went the way he went. And it's just like, end this on a sad note, but good God.
No, but I'm not going to add it on a sad note. I'm not going to say what happened to the guy, but like every time he spoke, he was one of those actors that you get on The Simpsons that didn't disguise his voice.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I hear Phil Hartman turn up in a film or a show that happens to be on, and my brain's like, oh my God, that's Phil Hartman. No one knows who I'm talking about. Like him. You could hear every character that he's ever done just with him talking, and it just fills me full of warmth every time.
It's when you think about how long those characters haven't been around in The Simpsons, though.
Yeah.
The time that he died, like how much of The Simpsons like life span.
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, Phil Hartman is what, Lionel Hutz and Troy McClure.
Troy McClure and yeah. And a few other uncredited voices, I think, in Springfield, if I remember rightly. I can't remember which ones, but...
Yeah, I can't think off the top of my head.
But yeah, it says a lot that those characters are still standouts, even though they haven't been in it for an extremely long time. Jingle All the Way is okay. Go watch it. If you choose to watch it on Christmas Day, you're not going to have a bad time.
No. It's actually on film 4. It's on film 4 on Christmas Day, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, 3:15, I think.
Wow. It's just did my homework. It's just silly, silly fun. You haven't got to invest in it. You just crack open a beer and just watch an hour and 25 minutes, hour and a half of just sheer joy of Arnold Schwarzenegger playing the same character but at Christmas time. And less R-rated.
Very much less R-rated, yeah. If they had a choice between Jingle All the Way and another movie, and Jingle All the Way was the better one of that other movie, what would that other movie be?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a question.
See, I'm expecting someone to say a Christmas film that I particularly like, so, and I'm going
to
tell them off.
Oh, does it have to be a Christmas film?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought you just meant any other film. A Christmas film's worse than Jingle All the Way.
I'm trying to think. Oh man.
So let's just narrow it down to anything that Netflix or Amazon Prime release these days.
Every one of those Hallmark films, like Home for the Holidays, A Christmas Wish, anything that's got like fucking Vanessa Hudgens in it now, sadly, her career's gone to shit. It's like, Patrick Duffy's in it or something. I don't know. It's just those awful, awful Hallmark direct-to-video films that are on, like, the streaming channels on Pluto TV. I'm not being too specific here.
I've watched two Christmas films this week that my good lady suggested we watch, and they've both starred 90s actors or actresses, and one was Lindsay Lohan, and the other the other one was Freddie Prinze Jr.
And I was like, poor, poor man.
And I was like, oh my God, he's got old.
Wow.
And, like, you know, you always have, like, embedded in your brain these actresses and actors on how they looked back in the day. And, like, obviously that image hasn't changed in the years in which we've grown up. So then when you see some of these actors as they are now, you're like, oh my God.
Who's looking up Freddie Prinze Jr.? I can hear Tati. Right.
I'm looking up his wife, though.
What's the Irish old gallop? New doubt.
Back in the 90s.
Fresh-looking young boy who you once was.
Nothing illustrates the passage of time more than seeing an actor you haven't seen in a long time and going, holy shit, they got old.
Exactly. He looks okay.
I think it was another film we watched on one of the streaming services last year, and it had Alicia Silverstone in it. And I was like, that's not Alicia Silverstone. No way is that. No way is that Alicia Silverstone. And it was. I was like, oh my God. Seeing an old Alicia Silverstone. I was like, no, she still looks the way she looks in Clueless. She doesn't look, you know, but obviously, real life.
I just want to see a version of this film that exists in the Last Action Hero universe.
That would be cool.
Where it's played by Sylvester Stallone.
I was literally about to say that.
I'm sure people have done Photoshop projects where they've done that.
That
jingle all the way with
film.
Sylvester Stallone.
Surely.
In the Last Action Hero universe, that'd be great.
I would pay to go and see Jingle All the Way with Sylvester Stallone in it. Absolutely, 100%. Sign me up from there.
Be another incoherent script delivery. Christmas.
Well, that's what you're there for when you see a Sly Stallone film, right?
Yeah, I it's my guilty pleasures. Arnie and Stallone movies, I can just watch if I'm feeling a bit crap. And I'll just watch it on, and I'm just like, I'm done, and I can watch it all night. Mm-hmm. It's just meaningless violence and fun. And it's just, yeah.
Have you seen his new film on Netflix, I think it was, where he plays, like, this down-and-out superhero?
No.
Oh, I heard about it. I forget what it's called now.
Stallone.
Yeah, we watched that, and it's all right, actually. I enjoyed it. It was a good film. But no, it had a predictable twist in this film, but apart from that, I thought his chemistry with the child actor in it was pretty cool, actually. It was a good film.
Samaritan?
Yeah, that sounds it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. I might add that to the list. The last time I watched a Stallone vehicle was those new Rambo films. So it's
I haven't watched Last
while.
Blood yet. I've got no desire to watch that.
No,
it's terrible.
I haven't either. Rambo 1 and 2 are acceptable, and then
Rambo is amazing.
Rambo
is amazing.
This is so delightfully gory.
He slits the guy's throat so much that the head comes off.
Yeah. I remember watching that, and he's just got that Gatling gun, isn't it, on the back of a truck?
That's right, and he turns it around at the driver, and the guy just fucking explodes in the driver's seat.
And then all these soldiers coming up over the marshes or rice paddies or whatever it is, and they literally just disintegrate.
Yeah.
And I love that, because you don't see that in films anymore. It's so sterile sometimes. And then to see, you watch Rambo, and you're like, holy shit, they went there.
How did we get onto this?
They actually,
I don't know.
They actually went there and vaporised hundreds of thousands of soldiers.
So their legs are falling off, and they're like holding their leg in their hands, where it's just like,
it's nuts, absolutely nuts.
That's a lot for this one. Thank you, as always, to everyone for joining us for this and for all our podcasts we have released throughout the year. Thank you very much. And if you would like to support us, then we do have a Ko-fi page where you can donate to the show, starting from £1. A massive thank you to all who have done so. You're all Christmassy legends. And if that is not right for you right now, you can also support us by giving us a review or rating on Apple or Spotify. You can find the links on our website. Speaking of the website, please go and check it out at thewolfiepod.com. It is the home to all our links, back catalogue of episodes, articles, and much, much more. We will be back in the new year. This is the last one for this year. For the video games of 1999. Wonder what that's going to be based on. Blue swirl or blue orange swirl, depending on which kind of, you know, whereabouts we lived. All that's left for us to say is Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
Yeah, and a happy, happy new year. We will see you in 2023. My name has been Jason. Dom, it's over to you.
Well, that's it for another episode of What's Wrong with Wolfie. The boys are off now to hit the roulette table with Patricia Routledge. See you later.
What's wrong with Wolfie? I can hear him barking.
Howdy ho! Merry Christmas!